We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
The political stakes are high Tuesday when Pennsylvania voters go to the polls to nominate candidates for governor and Senate. Candidates endorsed by Donald Trump are vying with other conservatives for the Republican nominations, which could determine whether the party can win the Senate in November and finally take the Pennsylvania State House after 8 years. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot, here with my two colleagues on the Wall Street Journal editorial team, Kim Strassel. How are you, Kim?
I'm well. How are you, Paul?
Good. And Kyle Peterson. Kyle, welcome.
Happy Monday, Paul.
The biggest primary day so far is this Tuesday in Pennsylvania for both parties, but especially for Republicans. But let's take the races one at a time, and let's start with a Senate race. This is a race to replace Pat Toomey, the Republican two-termer, who is, in my estimation, one of the best senators. And he's retiring, however, and this is an important race if the Republicans are going to retake the Senate. They need to hold Pennsylvania. And the Democratic candidate, Kim, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, and Congressman Connor Lamb. And the story here is that not too long ago, Connor Lamb was something of a Democratic candidate from central casting for Pennsylvania. Centrist. He looks like a senator, sounds like a senator, at least a senator from 10, 20 years ago. But he's trailing badly in the polls. I know you have followed this contest. What explains Lieutenant Governor Fetterman's success?
Yeah, so Connor Lamb, not just central casting, he was the model that Democrats have been using as a way to win these swing states and swing districts. A Marine veteran, former prosecutor, and just to give a little history here, he won in a special election in 2018 a district that had gone 20 points for Donald Trump 2 years earlier, just north of Pittsburgh. And he has done this as well by really kind of splitting the difference on a lot of big issues. So for instance, he's pro-choice. He was in favor of Joe Biden's Build Back Better agenda, in favor of that federal voting takeover. He's a big supporter of fracking, which matters a lot for jobs in Pennsylvania, has voted for more money for border security, was one of three Democrats to vote with Republicans to make permanent certain aspects of the 2017 tax reform. So those are his centrist credentials. Fetterman, who is the lieutenant governor, he kind of started with an advantage, though, because he had a big state profile simply by holding statewide office. He is quite the character. He's 6'9", tattooed. He grew up in affluence, but he very much has presented himself as a kind of working man's candidate, a liberal populist type approach. He's Elizabeth Warren without the charm, really does have very aggressive progressive ideology. But something about his entire persona, the amount of money he's had, he has massively outraised Connor Lamb, $16 million to $6 million on the latest numbers. And also, I think Connor Lamb is sort of struggling because a lot of very prominent Democrats have decided not to get into this race. They have not come and spoken on his behalf, and they've just left him flailing. And that is in part because nobody wants to go against the progressives in this race who a lot of senators are supporting Fetterman.
Remind me, Kim, has Fetterman called for the elimination of the filibuster? I believe he has.
Yes, he has. He's also Medicare for all, for transgender athletes and in women's sports, for gun control, for climate justice. He's been a little slippier on fracking. He says he's in favor of a de facto moratorium on fracking. He's very much a man of the left.
All right. Fascinating race. Looks like Fetterman will be the nominee, although we should say he suffered a mild stroke over the weekend and is hospitalized. He has tweeted and said he is going to return to the campaign trail after a bit of a respite, said it's a mild stroke. I don't know to what extent this will actually affect the vote. Sometimes these don't affect it all that much. People have kind of made up their mind. And with the size of lead he has, that may be safe even with this health setback. Let's turn to the Republicans here, Kyle. Kathy Barnett, a commentator, conservative commentator and military veteran, has come out of nowhere to challenge the two previous frontrunners, David McCormick, who is a former hedge fund manager and undersecretary of the Treasury. He is nonetheless running as a MAGA candidate. He sought Donald Trump's endorsement, didn't get it. And then there's Mehmet Oz, Dr. Oz of TV fame, who has been endorsed by Donald Trump and had, until recently, not demonstrated any real interest in politics, coming out of nowhere and to get Trump's endorsement. But now it looks like any one of the three might be able to win. And the big charge against Barnett by the other two is that she is somehow unelectable because of some of the things she has said. Let's listen to clips of two critics and then Barnett.
Never Trump groups have now come into Pennsylvania with outside money, and they are wrongly supporting Kathy Barnett and putting her in contention. And this is a candidate who lost by 20 points when she ran for Congress 18 months ago. So she's not going to do well in the general election, which is why President Trump is over and over again, even today, put out a new announcement saying that I'm the one to support because I can win.
She's now being supported by the Club for Growth, which is the establishment. I went and met with the Club for Growth, and I told them I was going to lead an America First agenda in the Senate, and they didn't like that. They didn't like the fact that I was going to be an America First conservative. So that's a real problem for Kathy, and that's the wrong kind of support, and that should give you pause on whether if she made it to the Senate, she'd be a great America First conservative.
At that time, I was hosting a show called Truth Exchange, and I would have all kinds of ideas and was leaning into helping the public begin to have those conversations. And so those were some of that's the context around a lot of those tweets. The overwhelming majority of the tweets that are now being presented are not even full thoughts. They're not even full sentences. And yet people take it and they begin to build their own narrative around it. So I can't provide a lot of context because, again, it's almost 10 years ago. That's how far they have to go back to try to find anything on me.
So that was first Dr. Oz, then David McCormick, and then Kathy Barnett responding. The perils here of Twitter, Kyle, even 10 years ago, it all comes back to haunt you. That's one of the reasons I'm not on Twitter. Not that I'm running for anything, but much to your no doubt regret. But Kyle, what is the argument against Barnett? How bad are these tweets and comments she has on her past?
Well, I think they're not helpful, and they're certainly not helpful when her explanation for them is that these were basically half-thought tweets, half-thought-out tweets at the time. But I think the question is, how much other stuff is there out there that we don't know about yet? I mean, Barnett has sort of come out of nowhere in this race. For a long time, it was a two-way race between Dr. Oz and David McCormick. And maybe part of the dynamic here is that McCormick and Oz were pounding each other in ads so much that voters decided they didn't really like either of them. But now she has rocketed up in the polls, and we still don't know a whole lot about her. She was born in Alabama. She worked in financial services for a while. She wrote a book about being a Black Republican. She has explained her pro-life views in part as saying that she was born after her mother was raped at the age of 11. And Republicans seem to have responded to that story, particularly while we're waiting for this Supreme Court decision on Roe v. Wade to come down. But I think the question is, what else is in her background that we don't know? She's deflected, her campaign has deflected a lot of questions, including from pretty conservative reporters on even basic stuff. So to take one, her book bio from a few years ago apparently says that she lived in Virginia. And so when did she move to Pennsylvania? How long has she lived there? Questions about her military service record. And so that is why even President Trump came out and said that he doesn't think that she can win the general election, although while also saying nice things about her and saying that she'll be an asset to the Republican Party in the long run. But it does seem to look like a three-way race right now that anybody could win. I'll check the Real Clear Politics polling average. That has Dr. Oz up with about 26%, Barnett then with 23%, and McCormick with 22%. And a lot of those dynamics can change. There are people who will go into the voting booth and not have their mind made up. On the other hand, there are about 1 million mail-in ballots that have been requested for this primary. So there is also that effect to take into account, that if someone surges in the last couple of days, there's a lot of people who've already voted.
Kim, you've been doing some reporting on this race and may have some insight into why the Club for Growth is supporting Kathy Barnett.
Yeah, my understanding is that the Club for Growth interviewed all these candidates early on, and they didn't get behind Barnett in the beginning, mostly because they didn't think she had a shot. And as she has surged here at the end, they've reevaluated. And I think the couple of things about her that have stood out for groups like the Club for Growth, she's also, by the way, been endorsed by the Susan B. Anthony group, but she's very strong on school choice. She is apparently also very strong on issues of taxes. You know, the Club for Growth, as many of us know, cares very much about pro-growth tax policy. So this has become an increasing focus for them as there are more and more Republicans who want to use tax policy to advance certain philosophical goals. So for instance, pouring more money into child tax credits. The club is often looking for people that instead understand the merits of good corporate tax policy, for instance. And so, and also I think they feel she's very strong on public safety issues right now when crime is such a huge issue, especially in the suburbs around Philadelphia, etc. She has been very strong in favor of the police. So I think those are a few things that have stood out.
All right, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll have more on the Pennsylvania primaries, governor and Senate races, and what they tell us about the November election when we come back.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot here on Potomac Watch with Kim Strassel and Kyle Peterson. Let's finish up on the Senate Republican race here. David McCormick being attacked for his hedge funds involvement in China. That would be certainly be an issue in the general election. On the other hand, McCormick is kind of a mainstream Republican in many ways. Dr. Oz is the biggest surprise that he has gotten Donald Trump's endorsement, apart from their personal friendship. Oz only recently is a convert to MAGA world. I mean, not too long ago, he was the epitome of the kind of establishment media type, pro-choice on abortion, talking about systemic racism and a lot of the tropes of the mainstream left. So he's been attacked on those grounds. What are the stakes here for Trump, Kyle?
Well, if Trump can't get Oz over the finish line after this high-profile endorsement, I think it will cause a lot of people to wonder what game he is trying to play here and whether it hurts him more than it helps him if he's thinking about running in 2024. Because if Republican primary voters reject his candidates, they start to wonder why he's endorsing these people. Is he really in it for the Republican Party, for the cause, or is he in it for his own end? And that's been one of the fascinating dynamics here as Oz has struggled to make the case to these voters what his real feelings are about Roe v. Wade or about gun control, to pick another issue. And so I think Trump has made a lot of endorsements, and there's no single race, no single state that is going to make or break his record. But I do think that if his candidates keep falling short, and Georgia's another state where it looks like they very well might, I think voters are going to remember that in 2024.
On that point, Kim, Doug Mastriano, the state senator, also endorsed by Trump late in the race last week, and he was somebody who has really endorsed Trump's view that the election in 2020 was stolen. There's some credible reporting that Mastriano was on site outside the Capitol when the riot was going on. And all of this baggage and other things has many Republicans in the state, some of whom I've talked to, very concerned that Mastriano cannot win the general election against Josh Shapiro, the sitting attorney general, who is likely to be the Democratic nominee. So they've been trying to, the field is split, it's divided, multiple candidates. They've been trying to get together to get some of these people out of the race to be able to coalesce against one alternative. Lou Barletta, former congressman, seems to be the favorite there. Melissa Hart, a candidate, dropped out and endorsed Barletta. Rick Santorum, the former senator from Pennsylvania, former presidential candidate, populist conservative, certainly culturally conservative Republican in his own right, trying to get people behind an alternative to Doug Mastriano, who they just think is really unlikely to win. So why did Donald Trump go in and endorse Mastriano here so late? I guess, did he feel, okay, he's got it sewn up and therefore I'll take credit for it, or what?
I think, bingo, I think that is definitely what happened. And, you know, the dynamics of this race are such that, as you just described, it's just been a pileup of candidates, which has really given Mastriano the running room to sort of have that lead that he does. I mean, some of the recent polling shows that he has yet to break 30% of the electorate, but when you've got eight other candidates splitting the rest, that's what accounts for where he is. So we're now seeing this late-breaking movement to try to do something about it. But much as Trump wallowed in at the very end and is trying to get, I think, some traction out of what looks like a candidate that might be unstoppable, I think the Republicans who are now very worried about this are also a little bit late. And, you know, interestingly, we saw this exact same strategy try to play out back in 2016 when Donald Trump was only getting about a third of the electorate, but there were so many other candidates. And you saw some people engage in shifting alliances and some leave the race in an attempt to stop him, but it was a little late at that point. And so while you've had State Senate Leader Jake Corman drop out, as you mentioned, Melissa Hart, they combined didn't have much of the electorate anyway. And it's getting harder to see a situation in which the second person, Lou Barletta, could still get enough to really make this a race with Mastriano.
Kyle, it does seem to be illustrative of what a big chunk of the Republican base vote seems to want. And they want a fighter. They want somebody who is going to take on what they call the establishment, Republican or Democrat, and just be an outsider and somebody who they think is authentic, as opposed to caring much at all about whether that person will win. Or at least they may care about that, but they're discounting it as a factor in their vote, thinking that, well, if you get the nomination, you have a very good shot at it. And of course, given the dynamics of this election year, where a Republican tide seems to be coming in, you could argue that maybe somebody like Mastriano or Kathy Barnett both could win, but they would not be, I think, as formidable candidates as some of the others. And then you have this notion, I think, with Trump. Karl Rove has made an interesting point about Trump's endorsements, and he's made so many of them, far beyond what any former president has ever done, at least not in the modern period. And what he's done in endorsing so many people is running the risk that he becomes a faction leader of a party, not instead of a kind of general leader of the party like most former presidents are, or certainly sitting presidents are. And he is siding with, you know, a certain group. And the Mastriano, it's very interesting because the Mastriano endorsement and the Oz endorsements in Pennsylvania have both upset quite a number of people who were in the Trump camp and in the Trump camp early. And Lou Barletta, the former Republican congressman who's running for governor, he's one of those who basically, I think, feels betrayed by Trump.
Yeah, and if they're upset now, you better believe they'll be doubly upset if Doug Mastriano wins the nomination and then loses the governorship. And even on some of the issues that he is vocal about, I mean, the Republican legislature in Pennsylvania has passed changes to voting laws that Republicans generally want to see enacted. Those have been vetoed by the current Democratic governor, Tom Wolf. And if you get four more years of Democratic vetoes on that kind of legislation, because the Republicans nominated a candidate who couldn't win the election, I think that there will be a lot of Republicans who will be pretty upset by that. And the Republican Party does have a history now and then of doing that. The famous example from 2010, of course, in Delaware was Christine O'Donnell, the Senate candidate, who by the end was trying to explain to people that she's not a witch. And there's potential for that here. And it's true that Republicans want a fighter. But just to pick a couple of things that Mastriano could be attacked by, not only does he think that the 2020 election was stolen, but he is talking about immediately ending all contracts with compromised voting machine companies, which to my eye is among the less convincing 2020 fraud theories, that there was some flipping of votes by voting machine companies that has been totally undetectable, or at least to the point where you can't prove it. Another thing is that last month Mastriano appeared at a rally where there was a lot of QAnon stuff being cited, people talking about, quote, child satanic trafficking and abuse of children, unquote. There was an opening sort of promotional video for the rally that went through things like the Illuminati and Hitler faked his own death and fluoride in the water. And to be clear, I don't think that Mastriano himself is a QAnon guy, but I do think that he has a duty of due diligence to make sure he's not speaking with a bunch of cranks and elevating them with his presence. And also just simply as a matter of politics, you better believe that the Democratic candidate, if he wins the nomination, is going to use that against him in the general election. So I don't know that that shows a great political judgment here. And I think we're going to be hearing more about that rally if he becomes the candidate, the Republican candidate going into November.
Well, you can imagine the 30-second spot, TV spot, that it will play into. I mean, you don't even have to work hard to put that together. So I think, you know, it's something for Republican voters to think about. But, you know, this idea, Kim, and I'll give you the last word, this question about electability does tend to play a role in primaries. It's important. So do principles, obviously. You want to get somebody who shares your principles. But these days, this notion of fighting and of being combative and looking like it and looking like you're authentic, that it carries over from Trump. It's one of the things that people loved about Trump, a lot of Republicans, because he wouldn't be intimidated by anybody. And a guy like Mastriano seems to be playing very much into that mold.
Yeah, this is obviously a premium. Although I would point out on the electability point, if Mastriano is at about 29% in the polls, that means about 70% of Pennsylvania voters are looking at another candidate who they think is more electable than he is. Again, this is part of the crowded field. And on your point about those spots, we've already had a spot like that against him. Josh Shapiro, who ran unopposed, he's a Democratic attorney general. He will be the candidate on the Democratic side for governor. He ran an ad against Mastriano. And, you know, because he's looking at the polls as well, too. When you look at generic polls, voters of Pennsylvania say they very much prefer a Republican governor, or somewhat prefer a Republican governor right now over a Democratic one, which would be really important. The GOP has lost 4 of the past 5 governor's races in Pennsylvania. But when you do matchups between Shapiro and Mastriano, the Democrat wins. So yeah, this is going to be a big thing that Pennsylvania voters have to think about tomorrow. And we'll see if there's any consolidation around someone other than Mastriano.
Well, the thing about that ad by Shapiro, I would just add, is that you could argue it was against Mastriano. On the other hand, it's rather slyly made the case that to MAGA voters, the Trump voters, that, yeah, you want to vote for this guy because he's one of you. And I think a lot of people interpreted it as saying Shapiro pushing for Mastriano to win the primary because that's who Shapiro really wants to run against. So that's a fascinating dynamic. And Democrats from time to time have been very effective in essentially helping to choose the Republican nominee they think they can beat. All right. Thank you, Kim. And thank you, Kyle. Thank you all for listening. We will be back, as always, every day with another edition of Potomac Watch tomorrow. Please send comments or questions to us at pwpodcast@wsj.com. Hope you hear us tomorrow.